Kimbrel deals in the air, deep left field, hit well. Benintendi on the run. He's got it! And the Boston Red Sox are headed to the World Series. The Red Sox will celebrate on the road once again. World Series bound. The fourth trip in the last 15 years and the first time since 2013.
It's special in every aspect, not only as a manager, but as an individual. Just to manage this team, everybody knows the history of the city, and you know, history has positive sides and negative sides. And for me, to as a minority, to be a manager in Boston, you know, it hasn't been a challenge. You know, people have been great with us, but obviously people talk about that. And to be able to lead this team is amazing. It's a great group, very talented, very humble, very hungry. You know, we won 7 games already in October. We still got 4 more to go.
Well, the Red Sox go in the World Series, first time since 2013. Red Sox beat the Astros 4-1. They win last night 4-1. And David Price, with his first ever win as a starter in postseason play, he was fantastic. He was well overdue. And on paper, you said, oh, well, Verlander versus Price. Well, we're going game 6 back in Boston. Not so fast. Verlander gave up a big 3-run homer to Devers in the 6th inning, and the Astros just never really recovered. I mean, the Astros were ahead in games 2, 3, and 4 and couldn't hold the leads on those games. So they had their opportunities. You're up 1-0. You'd beaten Chris Sale. And game 2, Gerrit Cole on the hill, it was great throughout the year, but did not pitch well in game 2. The Red Sox got that one. And then who would have thunk it? The Red Sox go to Houston. Houston's terrific at home. And the Red Sox win not one, not two, but all 3. And the Red Sox are going to the World Series. And we'll have a new World Series champion, as the Astros were the defending champs. They are knocked out. And the Brewers and the Dodgers, that is your series that's still left to play. The Dodgers lead that series 3-2. And here is the postseason schedule for that series, as game 6 will be today. Wade Miley will start again. Back-to-back games for the Brewers. Hopefully he'll throw more than 5 pitches. If he doesn't, the Brewers are really in trouble. Or Miley got hurt, which is still going to put him in trouble with their bullpen having to throw 8 and whatever. Dodgers at the Brewers. Rio is the starter for the Dodgers. Game 6 is tonight on FS1, 7:39 first pitch. Game 7, if necessary, will be tomorrow night, and pitchers to be determined. I think you'd probably see Clayton Kershaw in a Game 7 out of the bullpen. Anything goes in a winner-take-all situation in Game 7. So I'm hoping for a Game 7. That's the best thing in sports, in my opinion, a Game 7, no matter what the sport is. And I think the Brewers are going to find a way to get it done tonight and then force a Game 7. But I picked the Brewers before the series started, but I now will go ahead and I guess I can stick with it, but I think the Dodgers are just too good to lose both of these games at Milwaukee. Plus, they can use all arms on deck coming up in a Game 7, which makes them so much deeper, because they could use Buehler. Whether he starts Game 7, you got Kershaw. I mean, they've got lots of options when it comes to pitching, and the Brewers don't have as much except for their bullpen.
Yeah, and it's not like a lot of other sports where you have like this just distinct home field advantage in a game like this. You know, both of these teams are talented, and the Dodgers have had this experience now. They've been there before. This I don't think a whole lot's going to phase them. I'm with you. I don't think the Brewers are going to be able to win both of them.
I don't either, but Game 7, anything can happen. The Brewers have to win tonight, of course, to get to Game 7 tomorrow night. We'll talk more here on the Sports Ticket about baseball, particularly Kansas City Royals. We're here from Les Norman. We had him on earlier this week talk about the Royals in the upcoming offseason. Thursday night football, the Chiefs. K-State has a bye. KU has Texas Tech. And the Huskers, could they get their first win of the year? We'll chat about it coming up in a moment. But first, local sports, got Athlete of the Week. We've got football. We've got volleyball, cross country. It's a busy weekend.
Yes, we'll start with the Athlete of the Week. Braden Perez, sophomore from St. John's High School, St. John's Tipton football team, the NCKSSports.com Cunningham Telephone and Cable Athlete of the Week. He ran for a career-high 209 yards on 11 carries. It's just under 19 a carry last week, and had 3 touchdowns on the ground in the Blue Jays' 60-0 win over Lakeside last Friday night. So, been a ball hawk on defense this year as well, and had 3 takeaways in that win Two interceptions and a fumble recovery on a fumble that he forced on a lakeside kickoff return. So he's now run for over 100 yards for the seven games, 720 rushing yards on the season that leads St. John's Tipton. And on defense, he has three picks and three fumble recoveries, along with 38 tackles and two for loss. Braden Perez, our NCKSSports.com Cunningham Telephone and Cable Athlete of the Week. You want me to go to volleyball and cross country, and then we can
sure.
do football? Okay, we'll do it like that. Substate volleyball coming up this weekend, which is tomorrow, and then substate volleyball for Beloit Class 3A at Phillipsburg. They are the top seed there in that substate with a 31-4 record. They'll play Russell, who's 13-22. First match is at 1 o'clock. They're playing all those matches on one court there in Phillipsburg tomorrow. The biggest nugget about this is that seven of the eight teams have winning records going into this substate. TMP Marion, the number seven seed, is 20-15. Again, Russell 13-22, the only team that doesn't have a winning record. And again, that's Beloit's first round opponent. Colby and Norton, the 4-5 match. Phillipsburg takes on TMP in the 2-7 match. And 3-6 seeds are Minneapolis and Concordia. They're in Phillipsburg tomorrow. Also, 1A in Centralia. Substate number one is where St. John's Tipton will be competing. This point of the season, all these teams probably have winning records, and they do at this substate. Rural Vista's 36-4, the number two seed there in substate number one. St. John's Tipton 30-8 going into that match at 1 o'clock in Centralia tomorrow. Then Frankfort and Valley Falls against each other in the other semifinal. The two winners will play for the substate championship tomorrow afternoon in Centralia. Then 5 o'clock tomorrow, substate number two in Ransom at Western Plains High School. Thunder Ridge, the number one overall seed there with a record of 33-3. They'll take on Dighton, who's 22-11 in the first round at 5 o'clock. And then it's Rollins County against Otis Bison in the second semifinal match. And the winners again move on to the substate championship tomorrow evening in Ransom. And finally, in 2A substate, Smith Center, the number one seed at Plainville at 32-5, taking on Ellis, who's 6-24. They're playing those matches on two courts, so the east court is where Smith Center will be playing at 2 o'clock tomorrow. And up there on the top of the bracket with them, 4-5 matchup, Ness City against Plainville. Trigo takes on Oakley and Hoxie against Oberlin on the bottom side of the bracket in substate volleyball coming up here tomorrow. Cross country regionals coming up tomorrow, and Beloit will be at the Southeast of Saline Regional. Girls race starts at 10:30, boys at 11:15. So that's in 3A tomorrow. Rural Gypsum, Hannah and Haley Burks, who finished 1-2 at state last year, looking to make it back for the Beloit Lady Trojans here this year, and a lot of other athletes trying to make it in 3A for Beloit. Also in 2A at Republic County, Smith Center is competing at that regional. Girls at 10:30, boys at 11:15, and all of our 1A teams are competing at Washington County at girls race at 10 o'clock, boys at 10:40. So that includes St. John's, Lakeside, Tipton, as well as Osborne, Rock Hills, Lincoln, Sylvan Lucas, Pike Valley, and Glasgow and Milton Vale, all the area teams competing there. And a lot of area athletes have a chance to make it to state. St. John's cross-country team, the boys are the two-time defending state champions, so they're looking to get some kids qualified and try to have a chance to repeat there. That doesn't look like it's quite as feasible as it has been in the past couple of years, but you got to get enough people to get in and have your chance to do that. So we'll see if they can do that. And like I said, plenty of area athletes have a chance there in 1A cross country to make it to state and probably do some pretty good things at state as well. So regional cross country tomorrow. All that information that I just mentioned is posted at nckssports.com. Keep your eyes peeled. As soon as the results are posted, they'll go on the Acacia website on that post that we have at nckssports.com. You can click on that, and as soon as all those regional results are in, you'll be able to find them there. So regional cross-country substate volleyball coming up tomorrow. Tonight is the final night of the district season, the scheduled regular season for high school football here in the state of Kansas, and a lot of things coming up here this evening. We'll get things started with the Football Express on our game night coverage presented by Cunningham Telephone and Cable at 5:40, previewing all the area league matchups in the Northern Plains League, North Central Activities Association, and Mid-Continent League. And we have our games of the week on Katy Country 94 and Z96 Point Through the Lake that start with pregame at 6:30 and kick off at 7. Chad's in Osborne tonight with Thunder Ridge at Osborne on Katy Country 94 and 8-man Division II District 5, which will decide the championship in that district. And then on Z96 Point Through the Lake and katycountry94.com, Myself and Todd Clover will be up in Mankato. St. John's Tipton on the road at Rock Hills. 8-man Division II District 4 title game. Again, 6:30 pregame kickoff at 7. And our game night coverage concludes tonight. The local high school football scoreboard show at 10:05 on Katy Country 94, presented by State Farm Insurance in Beloit. Again, all the coverage also online at katycountry94.com. And also tonight, the Beloit Trojans wrap up district play at Russell on NCKSSports.com with the Beloit Trojan channel. Kickoff at 7 tonight between the Trojans and Broncos in 3A District 8 here this evening. So let's look at our coverage here on our stations and on the web. Other games tonight in the immediate area, an 8-man Division II District 4 Pike Valley at Lynn. Lakeside is at Blue Valley Randolph in a non-district game. Soap and Lucas looking to better their situation for the playoffs. They travel to Wilson in 8-man Division II District 5. And Lincoln finishes their district season in 8-man D1 District 7 with Clifton Clyde at home. And also in the Mid-Continent League, Smith Center has a 1A District 5 championship game against El Saline in Brookville here tonight. So that's a look at the football schedule for this evening and everything that's going on. Like Wade said, it's a busy time right now, and it's going to continue to be busy with state cross-country volleyball coming up next weekend. We'll see if we can get some folks qualified for that, and state playoffs beginning next week for football as well. So busy time, and we're looking forward to the coverage here this evening in week 8 of high school football.
All right, we'll go over the playoff scenarios now, and then we'll hear from some of the coaches of our feature games tonight on both of our radio stations. And let's just go one by one, and I'll start. Beloit more than likely is locked up into that 3 seed out of their district. They would go on the road to either Hugoton or Holcomb next Friday. So unless something insane would happen tonight, which it won't. So let's just go ahead and call it. Beloit will be on the road next week against Hugoton or Holcomb. Yeah, that's how it's going to be. Russell eliminated for playoff contention last week when they lost to Goodland. And Beloit Russell, as Dusty said on NCKSports.com live video stream tonight. We do know that St. John's Tipton Rock Hills, the winner is the district champion. The loser, district runner-up, both will have home games next week. And then you can go through from there. Osborne Thunder Ridge.
Yes, Osborne Thunder Ridge, the winner is the District 5 champion. If Osborne would lose, they would finish second. If Thunder Ridge loses, it's a points deal with Northern Valley and Sylvan Lucas. And there's so much of a difference that it would take forever for us to decide all that. So we'll wait and see what the points look like after the night's over. And, you know, Northern Valley still has to beat Logan Palco tonight, too. That could mess that up even a little bit more for the – it wouldn't mess it up for 2 and 3. Then you'd have 2 and 3 pretty well gathered around. Then it would be who's fourth place there in the district. So, yeah, Thunder Ridge, simply if they win, is district champion. If they lose, they could finish anywhere as low as fourth. And Sylvan Lucas is guaranteed in the top four in that same district if they get a win tonight against Wilson. And again, they can finish as high as second if Thunder Ridge and Northern Valley would both lose, and all the points that go into that. So that's that district anyway for those games in 8-man Division II, District 5. And really, that's in our immediate area, that's all that's left other than Smith Center. Like I just mentioned, they have the 1A District 5 championship. Their opponent, El Saline, and them are both 2-0 in district play. So whoever wins that is the district champion, and whoever loses finishes second in that district. So, you know, Lincoln's already eliminated from the playoffs in their game tonight. Pike Valley has wrapped up a third-place finish in District 4 that we're talking about with Rock Hills and St. John's Tipton. And Southern Cloud has to win tonight, and if they do that, they're the number 4 seed, or number 4 team, I should say, out of that district in 8-man Division II District 4. So kind of wraps up all the scenarios, at least for our immediate area teams here tonight.
All right, big game up in Mankato. Like we said, both teams have locked into the playoffs. Both will have home games next week, but there is a big difference playing Frankfort or Donovan West. Yes. So that's, to me, really, this is what you're playing for. You're playing for a much better chance to win your first playoff game and make it to the second round of the 8-man playoffs. And tonight it should be a good ball game up Mankato, which you can hear on Z96.3 The Lake. And where is my cut? There we go. Coach Christine on slowing down Colson and the Rock Hills running game.
You got to get him before he gets going, and you got to hang on. You got to be sure. We have to be sure tacklers because he's kind of got that elusive, you know, not a great big kid, but he's shifty.
And Brock McMillan says the offenses may need to open up the playbook a little bit more, and they will have their quarterback back.
Just sets up for a good, nice physical battle more than anything. It, you know, two teams that for most of the year, to be honest, have just kind of relied on the power run game. And when you get a situation like that here late in the season, maybe both teams haven't had to pull out all the stops, haven't had to use the entire playbook in some of these games this year. But when it gets down to district championship time, you're going to see what each team is really about.
Rock Hill St. John's Tipton tonight on Z96.3 online, KatieCountry94.com. Anything else you want to add on that one?
No, I mean, it's just an exciting time to be able to play all these games, and then you have a game there at the end where it just sets up perfectly for you, where both teams are undefeated, and this is what's going to decide the district championship, and I'm looking forward to it. You know, I think St. John's Tipton, if they can do what Coach Christine just said, be sure tacklers and make sure you can kind of slow that running game down. They've got a better chance than I think a lot of people might give them in tonight's game, because they're not a team that's folding at all this year. And Rock Hill's, you know, they're getting healthy.
Yes.
And so that's the key for them to try to make a deep run here in this playoff.
St. John's Tipton at Rock Hills tonight on Z96.3 Lake. On Katy Country 94, katycountry94.com, Osborne will be hosting Thunder Ridge. Bulldogs have been on fire since losing to Hoxie early in the season. And head coach of the Bulldogs, Brandon Wise, talks about how Thunder Ridge is doing some really good things.
Coach Shuckoff's done a nice job with this program in his first year as being coach. You know, they get after it. They do a lot of good things offensively and defensively and special teams. I expect them to come out swinging, and we're going to have to match that if we want to be able to come away with a win tonight.
And Joel Struckoff, if you had to give a Coach of the Year award in our area, I think you have to give it to Joel Struckoff. Yeah. I think he'd run away with that award. I know the other coach has done a really nice job, but considering him stepping in as such a young coach with some of his former teammates off that state championship team helping him out on the staff and helping turn around what was a program that wasn't going in the right direction. Let's just be honest about it. And now they are going in the right direction. And Coach Struckoff, he'd be my vote for Coach of the Year in North Central Kansas.
Yeah.
Would you guys agree with that?
Definitely.
I mean, it's pretty impressive what he's been able to accomplish. And tonight would be a big feather in the cap if you can go to Osborne and knock off the state-ranked Bulldogs. And Coach Struckoff talks about what they can do or how can you slow down Osborne.
The best thing you can do to combat speed is, you know, hopefully you can stop them from getting outside, which is something that we're going to try to do. Offensively, we'll try to slow the game down. The only way to really counter speed offensively is try to slow the game down, take as much time as possible, do the small, simple things, like I said, you know, try to eat some clock away to keep the ball out of their hands, and defensively, hopefully, make some stops and get some turnovers.
Best defense for Thunder Ridge tonight would be their offense.
Yes.
That would be their best defense, is keep the Holloways and Cade Miller and Scherr on the sideline, and then you don't get as many possessions. And if Osborne turns it over once or twice, all of a sudden, you know, Osborne maybe gets a little, feels a little bit of pressure, and Thunder Ridge has to control the trenches in some way if they're going to be effective in shortening the game.
Yeah, and like I have always said about it, it's your offense is your best defense, and you got to milk the clock, and you got to finish with a score.
Yeah,
because if you don't,
Osborne's going to score in about 2 minutes.
Doesn't
usually
matter. You know, yes, however many possessions Osborne has,
yes,
probably going to score on about 8 out of 9 every time. You know, like, they're tough to stop. So you've got to score. Like I said earlier, Sylvan Lucas had the blueprint, but they just couldn't finish off their drives.
Chad will have the call from Osborne. Osborne hosting Thunder Ridge tonight. Once again, if Osborne, either one wins, they win the district. And if Osborne loses, they'd be second. Thunder Ridge loses, they could be anywhere from 2, 3, or 4 out of that district and have a different playoff matchup coming up next week. So a pretty big game there, but it's an interesting district. But Osborne certainly is the heavy favorite to come away with the victory tonight. But Thunder Ridge could change that with an upset. Okay, and then Beloit at Russell tonight. I mentioned that earlier on NCKSports.com via the Beloit Trojan channel. Beloit has beaten Russell 11 straight times, but there have been a few times where games have been close. Last year was midway through the third quarter. Beloit led just 18-14 and then won 36-14. So we'll see what Russell, I think the key there is Russell going to be really inspired, ready to go after a really demoralizing loss at Goodland last week, where statistically they won the game, but they had 4 turnovers. They lost at Goodland 29-26. It was Goodland's first win in over a year. And Russell was expected to win that game, so that would set up a big game against Beloit tonight. Now it doesn't mean much other than it's senior night for Russell. So if Beloit gets out to a really quick start and a quick lead, I think Beloit's probably going to cruise. But if Russell could get some early confidence, then we could have a ball game. Bullitt at Russell tonight on NCKSports.com via the Bullitt Trojan channel. So we look forward to all that. Our coverage begins with the Express, brought to you by Cunningham Telephone Cable at 5:40 tonight on KD Country 94, KDCountry94.com. Pregame at 6:30, kickoff at 7, and then the local high school scoreboard show brought to you by State Farm Insurance and Bullitt coming to you at 10:05. So there's a look at high school football. Pro football last night, former Jayhawk getting it done for the Broncos.
Third down and one. Christian Kirk motioning on the left side of the line. Pressure coming. Quick toss, and it's intercepted. Threw it right into the hands of Chris Harris at midfield. Veers right to the 40. Harris to the 30. High steps a man at the 20, and he's going to high step his way into the end zone with a high five for Todd Davis as he gets six. Second pick six tonight for the Denver defense, and they've got a 20-3 lead.
Broncos crushed the Cardinals. You know, the Broncos played the Cardinals every week. They'd go to the Super Bowl. The Cardinals are really bad.
You say that about a lot of teams.
I saw last night, I think there's a lot of teams that'd be the Super Bowl.
Yeah, well, anybody gets the Cardinals right. Yeah, that's the situation. You have a rookie quarterback, and the offensive line didn't play well, and Von Miller just dominated. And Von Miller said before the game, during this week, he said, we're going to kick their you-know-what. And he went out, and they did. You know, if you're going to talk the talk, many times guys don't walk the walk. Von Miller backed it up last night. Yeah. And it was a wake-up call. And, you know, you look at the Broncos. They're 3-4, and yes, are they a playoff contender? You probably don't feel that way right now, but if they can go into Kansas City, the Broncos will have 10 days to prep for KC, just like the Patriots had 10 days to get ready for the Chiefs. Patriots won. It will be at Arrowhead next Sunday, but we know the Broncos can run the ball against the Chiefs, and if they would have stuck with that game plan, I think they would have beat the Chiefs the first time. So the Chiefs would be coming off a Sunday night game, the Broncos off a Thursday night, much more time to prepare for the Broncos. If the Broncos can beat Kansas City in Arrowhead next Sunday, then suddenly they're 4-4, and now they're a factor in the AFC.
Yeah.
I mean, they can easily turn around their season. It was an impressive win last night against a team that's not very good. Now, speaking of the Chiefs, they've got a big game tomorrow night, or excuse me, Sunday night at Arrowhead against the Cincinnati Bengals, who are 4-2, and the Chiefs coming off their first loss of the season. And Patrick Mahomes, he's used to the big stage by now, isn't he? A Monday night game, a Sunday night game. He's come through with flying colors. Now another Sunday nighter on NBC.
Yeah, I mean, every experience, I feel like it's a learning experience. And being able to play in two primetime games already and then having another one at Arrowhead, I mean, it's really exciting. And being able to get those experiences and kind of use that in order to have more success, hopefully this Sunday will be a lot of learning that I'll take in.
First primetime game at Arrowhead, though, for Patrick Mahomes. It'll be electric, I guarantee you. I'm going to be at the ball game, and I hope it's not too cold because I'm a wimp when it comes to that anymore. But it should be fun. The atmosphere will be electric. Night games at Arrowhead are special. They really are. And usually Chiefs play very well primetime at home and usually, more often than not, win in one way or another, whether a blowout. Seems like almost every primetime game the Chiefs have at Arrowhead, they get a kick return for a touchdown. It just seems that way to me. I don't know why, but Bob Sutton, he's under fire, has been for 3 years, for me anyway. He talks about, it's not about yards, it's about points when it comes to defense. Here's Bob Sutton explaining that.
The single most important statistic, if you're going to have one on defense, is points. That's the game, you know, and that's why, like, you make that red zone stop. That's a big deal in the game. It gives you a chance to win it, you know. And, I'd like to have them have no yards, you know, but that's probably not going to happen. And I don't think yards really are a true indicator of what's going on. Now, if you're going to give up yards, you know, then you got to do some other things really good. You got to be really good on third down. You got to do takeaways. You know, you got to be good in that area. And you got to be good in the red zone. And if you do those three things – I think you're going to have a chance to help your team be in position to win.
Okay, so let me get it straight. Points, and that's the ultimate thing defensively. But yards really don't matter too much. But yet, in that same press conference, Bob Sutton said, well, we had Brady held to about 180 yards passing going into the fourth quarter. Yeah, but how many points did they have, Bob? The answer's 30. So Tom Martin of KCT Vibe Kansas City tweeted, it was pretty funny. He says, I like hearing about Bob Sutton. I like hearing from Bob Sutton. But today he reiterated that yards don't matter so much as points, which they gave up 43 to New England. But then referenced how the Chiefs did well against Brady by saying his yards were low going into the fourth quarter, despite having given up 30 points to the Patriots at that point of time. And he goes, huh. Yeah. Kind of contradicts a little
what
bit.
What can I say? Yards that are important. Try to save my job, right?
Yards
now.
Are pretty important.
We held Tom Brady.
Yards are pretty important when they lead to 43 points.
Yeah.
Kind of important.
Yeah.
Here's the injury report for the Chiefs. Eric Berry, shocking. Andy Reid said again this week he's getting better. Yet he has not practiced once this season. He's not better until he practices. Okay, that's all I want. That's all I want to know. I will think he's better when he starts practicing. This is week 7. He has not practiced yet. He will. I'm starting to wonder if he's even going to play this year. So you waste a roster spot for a guy that's going to not play at least half the season. The Chiefs, something, somewhere, they misread the situation. Eric Berry did not practice again. Justin Houston did not practice this week so far. He will probably be out again with a hamstring injury. Mitch Morse, concussion, their starting center, out. He has not practiced all week, so that means Devy will be the center, and you'll have Wiley probably at right guard, which could be a little bit scary. Cam Irving with a quad injury, full practice, though. Anthony Hitchens with a groin injury. That might explain some of his issues trying to tackle running backs, but I won't give him a full pass there. Limited participation yesterday. Chris Conley with toe injury. D Ford still with a groin and a hand injury, but they fully participated. Tanau passing out with an ankle injury, full participant, so it looks like he'll play this week. And Eric Murray had an ankle injury that he missed last week's game. It looks like he'll be back. So good news. A little more depth there on the pass rush with Passanau. Eric Murray, you get a little bit more experience back there at safety with him back. So those are good. That's good news. The bad news is Morris is out, and he seems to get hurt every year, miss a couple of games.
Yeah.
He's been a little bit jinxed. And Houston's out, and, of course, we know Barry's out. For the Bengals, they've got a ton of guys. Holy cow. On the injury list, they got – let's see here. I'm going through anybody of note. Defensive end Carlos Dunlap. Buttock injury. I love it. He did fully practice yesterday. Andy Dalton's got a back issue, but he'll be ready to go. A.J. Green – not injury-related, limited practice yesterday, missed Wednesday's practice. The Bengals are a team that they can score points. They are pretty good offensively. Joe Mixon gives them a new dimension in the backfield. They've got talented receivers, A.J. Green and Taj Boyd. Andy Dalton's played pretty well this year. Their defense isn't all that, but I just think primetime, and I don't even know the numbers, but the Bengals are god-awful primetime games, Sunday night, Monday night. They can't win in primetime usually. And under Marvin Lewis. So you like those odds. Listen, if the Chiefs defense takes advantage of the crowd and the Chiefs get the early lead, then the Chiefs, I think, are going to roll. But if they get down early and have to rally like against Denver on the road and New England on the road, then it's going to be quite a game. It's going to come down to the wire. But here's the thing. The Chiefs haven't really gotten behind at home this year when they played. They've handled things when they've been at home. I mean, the Niners, they got up big. They got on Jacksonville big. So the equation is pretty simple. Jump out to a lead, and then your defense can pin their ears back with the crowd noise and go after these tackles and get to the quarterback. And Andy Dalton's not a super mobile quarterback. So that's the whole key for the Cincinnati pull off the upset, in my opinion. They've got to get off to a good start.
Oh, yeah.
And if they're down 10-0 early, it's probably going to snowball on them. I think the Chiefs are going to win this game fairly comfortably, even though the defense has lots of issues. They'll probably come up with a turnover or two, get a key sack, maybe some false starts the crowd causes, and then they get into second, third, and long. And I don't see the Bengals slowing down the Chiefs' offense in this game.
No. As you said, they're okay defensively, but they're nothing special, and nothing special is not going to get the job done against the Chiefs. No.
New England's defense, nothing special. Gave up 446 yards in 23 minutes of possession time, and that's despite the Chiefs throwing two picks and settling for four field goals. Imagine what the Chiefs can do if they had 30 minutes of possession time. That's just equal, 50-50 down the middle. If they just would have that. And that's why yards do matter, Bob Sutton, on your defense. Because even though you might not break and you hold them to a field goal, the fact that the other team went down the field 6.5 minutes shortens the game and limits the possessions for your explosive offense. So yards do matter. As much as points, no, technically no. But yards do lead the points. We know that, obviously.
Yes.
So anyway.
At some point, they have to.
Yes, exactly.
Unless you're like the Broncos last night, and you get you have 7 points from your offense, and you're up 21-3.
Yeah, so. It helps you get two defensive scores, right?
Yeah.
Let's see. Bengals at Chiefs pregame at 6 o'clock, kickoff 7:20 on Sunday Night Football on Z96.3 The Lake. Other games in NFL this weekend. Tennessee is at the Chargers. Chargers are red hot at 4-2. The Chiefs lose to the Bengals, and the Chargers beat the Titans. It's a tie atop the AFC West, just like that. The Patriots at the Bears. Go Bears. Buffalo at Indianapolis. Houston at Jacksonville. Both teams 3-3. Detroit at Miami. Brocktober, baby. Brocktober. Brock Osweiler is going to get the start again, it looks like, this week for the Miami Dolphins. How did the Broncos let that great guy get away? Minnesota at the Jets.
Twice.
Carolina at Philadelphia.
Too slowly, if you ask me.
Cleveland at Tampa Bay. New Orleans at Baltimore is a good one. New Orleans 4-1, Baltimore 4-2. Cowboys at the Redskins, always a good rivalry. The Rams are at the 49ers. And we mentioned the Chiefs hosting the Bengals Sunday Night Football. Monday Night Football is a bit of a dud. Giants at the Falcons. Big 12 football this weekend. Oklahoma is at TCU. Those games are usually close at Fort Worth. KU at Texas Tech, Baylor at West Virginia. Actually, excuse me, there's just the two games. Oklahoma at TCU, Kansas at Texas Tech, and then next Thursday, Baylor is at West Virginia. And KU head coach David Beatty letting go of his offensive coordinator, he explains.
Well, ideally, you would never want to make a change at this time of the season. But, you know, when I asked myself two questions as I got to this point. And the first one was basically, are we putting our players in the best position to be successful? And as a leader, you got to put your emotions to the side, because Coach Meacham is one of my best friends in the world, and I love him to death and respect him greatly. But I had to ask myself that question. The other one was, have we made the progress that we're capable of, and do I see the progress improving from here? And the answers to those questions clearly led me to make the decision that I made. And just understanding that all of these decisions that we make in our programs are based completely on football facts that lead us to what's best for the players.
Listen, I don't think this is going to work. I'm just going to say it. I don't think it's going to be an improvement. I hate to be Debbie Downer here. I understand why David Beatty did it, though, because I think he was sitting there going, listen, if we don't get any marquee wins, if this offense doesn't get better, I'm out of a job next year. So if I'm gonna go down, I'm going to go down being in control of everything.
Right.
So Doug Meacham lets you go. Decided on Peyton Bender as his quarterback this week. Next week it'll be somebody else probably. And Beatty's going to call the plays. While he's on the sideline, he'll have help from upstairs. Coach Beatty has problems managing the clock and calling timeouts and burning timeouts after there's a kickoff and you burn a timeout before you even snap a play. They call timeouts when they can't decide whether they want to go for it on fourth down. You should know on third down whether or not you're planning on going for it on fourth down. Now he's going to call the plays? Come on. I don't see how this is going to go very well.
You talk about being a Debbie Downer. I think it's more like your cousin, Reggie Realistic.
Thank you. You know, I like that. Just, I never heard that before. Reggie Realistic.
I just made that up.
I like it.
Now.
I like it. But copyright.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's just I don't see this is going to work, but I think you're right. It's like, well, if I'm going to go down, I'm going to go down.
Yeah, doing it my way. Bill Whittemore and Todd Reesing aren't walking through that locker room door. And if you had one of those, then that would change things. Maybe, but not in this case. Okay, Texas Tech's the opponent. Texas Tech's defense is improved this year, and they are an explosive offensive team as well, as always.
Obviously, they're a top five offense in the country. I believe they're leading the Big 12, if I'm not mistaken, offensively. I mean, it's not a with Cliff, they do it every year. He's one of the best minds in the game. And he does a terrific job with identifying QBs and knowing who's going to be special. I mean, I watched one of them play last night on television that is just a freak. And, you know, Cliff helped develop that young guy. But he's got another one. You know, the Bowman kid is a terrific player. You know, I saw that hit he took against West Virginia, and hopefully he's okay. We fully expect him to be back playing. But, you know, they also got another element there in Jet Duffy, a guy that can really run. I think he throws it better than what we would like for him to. But he's got potential. He's really, really a good player.
David Beatty, head coach of the Jacks, talking about the explosiveness of Texas Tech. KU at Texas Tech in Lubbock, 2:30 kickoff, pregame at 2 o'clock tomorrow on Z96.3 The Lake. KU trying to break that long Big 12 road losing streak. I don't think any of us believe the streak will be snapped tomorrow.
No.
Unanimous. Shocking.
Don't even need to say anything else.
It doesn't take long to talk KU football. We're all pretty much in agreement.
At this point, once we get past the first like 2-3 weeks of the season, when the question is, KU going to win? My answer is just probably
just
not.
Just automatically no? Yes. It's your condition to do that now. All right, K-State, they will not lose or win this week. They have the weekend off. They'll be at Oklahoma next week. And it's interesting, but the last couple of times K-State has had a week off before going to Norman, they've won. And I'm going to say this right now. We'll talk more about OU K-State next week. If K-State – listen, Oklahoma is not good against the run. Oklahoma's not good defensively at all. And they're not good against the run. And if K-State, as long as they start Skylar Thompson and play him all four quarters at Oklahoma, they have a chance to win that game. And I know, as crazy as K-State fans think that is to say, K-State fans that I hear from automatically think that's a loss. But they've thought that the last two times when K-State's won in Norman. They never gave their team a chance to go into Norman and win. And they don't give them a chance now with the way this team is going. But they also don't follow Oklahoma football. They're so caught up in their own team that they don't understand that Oklahoma has lots of issues as well. I mean, Oklahoma gave up 48 points against Texas. They got out physical at the line of scrimmage. If K-State wins the battle in the trenches, especially with their offensive line, who has played very well the last two games, they maybe have found something with the running game with Alex Barnes. Skylar Thompson can also run it. There's the threat of the pass. As long as K-State can shorten the game and keep Oklahoma's offense off the field, K-State's got a chance to win that game next Saturday. A legitimate chance. I'm not saying they're going to win the game, but I'm not saying they can't. In fact, I think they've got a better chance than people give them credit for, because if they can get the ball first, let's say, they go down and score, up 7-0. I saw Army in person, and I know they run it every single time, but they're one-dimensional, and they ran it every single time. And Oklahoma was extremely fortunate to win that game in overtime. And we've seen Texas run it down Oklahoma's throat. Kansas State can run the football right now. And Oklahoma State's better against the run than Oklahoma is, and they ran right down Oklahoma State's throat. So I think they've got a shot against Oklahoma next week. But we'll talk more about it as we prepare for it next week. We'll have Riley on GoPowerCat.com. And we talk about the offensive line, and it is coming around, and Riley talked about that. We have him on every Tuesday, brought to you by Heineken Electric and Hanson Auction Realty.
And so I was kind of skeptical, you know, was it just a bad defense they played? But Oklahoma State was the number one rushing defense in the country. Or, excuse me, not in the country, in the Big 12. And Alex Barnes goes for four touchdowns. You know, we see a dominant ground attack again from K-State, which is exactly what we thought we were going to see all season long. You know, it's frustrating that it took until game seven to get it going. But, you know, better late than never, so to speak. And I think it was a really good performance by that offensive line, and maybe something they can build on moving forward. Definitely two back-to-back very positive weeks. And, you know, I can't think that does anything but build your confidence with the last five games or so of the season here.
Coach Snyder, talking earlier this week about Skylar Thompson's play against Oklahoma State.
You know, he certainly has improved his play. He's got, you know, at the quarterback position, you've got so much on your plate. And, you know, a big part of it, you know, being able to manage the game, get in and out of the right things becomes highly significant. And, you know, he's making improvement in that area. You know, to be able to, you know, pull the ball down when you need to. I thought that was probably the area that he made the most progress in, was, you know, not forcing, you know, many throws. And when it wasn't there, being able to bring the ball down, because he can, you know, he can run. He's good. He's a good runner with the ball, and he made, you know, some decent plays in that regard. So I think all around, you know, collectively, he played a good ball game against a good defensive football team, but still has, you know, room to improve. Really has enhanced his leadership through the course of the week, and during the course of the ball game, he became a more vocal leader, and that comes with time on the job and experience, because you've got so many things you're thinking about as a quarterback that sometimes, you know, interacting with your teammates is kind of low on the totem pole, but he's been able to manage it all here of late.
Did Bill Snyder give compliments to Skylar Thompson? Am I hearing that straight? Did you hear the same thing that I heard?
It sounded out of character, but I, yeah.
Was that Bill Snyder?
Somebody, some robot take the press conference this week and give Bill the week off.
A different robot?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right. Hey, that was Beer Snyder. That wasn't Bill, that was Beer.
Was Beer Snyder.
That was Beer Snyder. If you don't get the joke, I misspoke earlier and said Beer Snyder instead of Bill Snyder. It tells you what I'm thinking about here this weekend, isn't it? Well, listen, I think K-State's got a shot at Oklahoma. And if you run the ball effectively like they have the last few weeks, if, big if, you can do that against teams the rest of the way, you're going to have a chance to win football games. I don't care who you play. Because there's not – one. First of all, the best team in the Big 12 right now, people think, is Texas. K-State should have beat Texas. If you played Skylar Thompson whole game, I think you would have played or would have beat Texas.
Let's rehash all that.
You played West Virginia. Yes. You got smoked by them early in the year. And so really the top team that's left on your schedule is Oklahoma. And if you can beat Oklahoma, which I think they can with the right scenario, the recipe is there. Their strength matches up against Oklahoma's weakness. They can beat anybody else left on their schedule. And having said that, this K-State team is certainly possible of losing the rest of the games on our schedule. But I think they're going in the right direction. They have some confidence. I think that players' meeting helped. And you saw the offensive line playing inspired ball the last 2.5 weeks. Because remember, second half played a lot better against Texas. So they're going in the right direction. And then you have a week off to get everything honed in and prep for Oklahoma. You know, you win at Oklahoma, next thing you know, K-State fans are going, well, hey, we might be able to win out. That's how football can change sometimes.
Yeah, right now, the way K-State's put together and the way they look, I'm not worried. As long as they do the right things offensively, I'm not worried about that side of the ball right now.
Mm-hmm. It's the defense.
The defense has not been good, and they could not stop Baylor. And Oklahoma's offense is a lot better than Baylor's.
Yes, it is.
Let's just say that. And Texas Tech's offense is a lot better than Baylor's. You know, as you go on with what, as long as they're healthy at quarterback, you know, and that's what concerns me about K-State is we can get excited about what they're doing offensively right now, but their defense, similar to the Chiefs, they don't tackle well. Their secondary's not great when they have to cover. You know, they've got a lot of the same issues that I'm watching on Sunday, I'm seeing on Saturday before it. So that's what concerns me more about anything, as long as coaches are making the right decisions with what to do offensively.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's going to be interesting to see how K-State addresses everything this week into next week and going to Oklahoma. And it'll be interesting how Oklahoma fares at TCU as well.
Yeah.
Because odds are Oklahoma's not going to lose back-to-back games, and the last game Oklahoma played was Texas. They lost. So you assume they beat TCU. But if they lose to TCU, Oklahoma's got a 2-game losing streak going into the game against K-State. And we know K-State can win in Norman. In fact, K-State has more success in Norman than they do playing the Sooners at Manhattan.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a drastic difference. That doesn't make sense, but that's the way it is. Remember, Oklahoma's got their defense figured out, though. They fired the defensive coordinator. Yeah. That solves everything. All right, K-State, I owe you next week. The rest of the Big 12 schedule, we already covered that, actually. Oklahoma, TCU, KU at Texas Tech, 2 o'clock pregame on Z96.3 Lake. We shift gears to the Huskers. The Huskers are 0-6, 0-4 in conference play. Host Minnesota, who's also winless in the Big Ten, 0-3, but 3-3 overall. Kickoff at 2:30 coming up tomorrow. Huskers get their first win of the season tomorrow. Yes or no, Dusty?
No.
Chad?
Yes.
I say yes as well. Although I was saying all along Illinois would be the only one they win, but I look at Minnesota. They played really well against Ohio State, and now they go in Nebraska. It sounds crazy, but I think Minnesota's actually going to have a letdown, even though they just lost
last week.
And they give up. Minnesota's defense isn't great. Husker's offense is really good. It's the self-inflicted turnovers and penalties, and, of course, their defense hasn't been very good. That seems to be a theme. Oklahoma, Chiefs, K-State. The best defense in this whole Midwest is KU. To be quite honest,
it is.
It is. Yeah. But then they don't have any offense. Yeah, I know. Like Brian Haney said yesterday, they've, 15 turnovers, and they got a whole whopping 35 points off of those 15 turnovers.
Yeah, that's not good.
That's not good. And that's why Doug Meacham got fired, basically. Okay, top 25 games this week, a couple of big ones. Michigan is at Michigan State. Everybody's starting to jump on the Michigan bandwagon. Oh, they blew out Wisconsin. Watch them lay a big fat egg against Michigan State. Oklahoma at TCU, they're ranked 9th. And Alabama is at Tennessee. North Carolina State, number 16, at number 3, Clemson. Colorado with their first loss last week at number 15, Washington. And the other bigger game is Mississippi State, number 22, at number 5, LSU. And number 12, Oregon, is at number 25, Washington State. MIAA coming up this week. It will be Fort Hays State at Nebraska Kearney at 11 a.m. Missouri Western, Emporia State at 2. Central Missouri at Pittsburgh State at 2, and Northwest Missouri State will be at Lindenwood at 1 o'clock. Okay, we had Brian Haney on, the voice of the Jayhawks yesterday, brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency. And I asked Brian about the distraction, or is it a distraction, the whole college hoops FBI probe and trial that's taking place in New York. Here was Brian's answer.
Well, it would be naive and quite frankly inaccurate to sit here and pretend like it's not a distraction. I know the guys see the press clippings, like you said. I know they see what's popping up on Twitter with updates and that kind of thing. And I'm sure for Silvio in particular, you know, that there's a certain amount of anxiety that he's facing day in and day out. For all accounts that I've seen and witnessed myself, he has been able to keep his focus right where you'd want it to be. He's kept a cheerful demeanor. I don't know what he's like behind closed doors, if he's constantly, you know, logging onto the website to find out what's going on or what, but the young man is approaching every day like he's getting ready for next Thursday and the exhibition opener, approaching every day like he's getting ready for a breakout sophomore season. And you got to tip your cap to him, because that'd be really hard to be able to have that laser focus, sharp focus in terms of tunnel vision on basketball and not thinking about the other, you know, possibilities that are going on out there. You know, obviously this is a federal case, not an NCAA thing, and so whatever's decided, whether it's this week or early next, is coming from the trial itself and does not have NCAA consequence, you know, in the immediacy of that decision. And so coach's got to get these guys ready for those exhibition games, ready for Michigan State. When all this stuff first went down, you know, they very much had the standpoint of, you know, we were the victims in this thing. We didn't know this stuff was going on. Obviously, some of the stuff that's come to light in recent days has folks concerned from a public perception standpoint.
Sure.
But we got to just let the dust settle and see what ultimately comes from the federal investigation and trial before the NCAA has any say in this. And we stand behind our coaches and our staff 100%. And obviously, real hopeful that this is something that ultimately gets a good resolution. But in the meantime, you know, you're right to ask, is it a distraction? I'm sure it has been on some level.
Okay, so follow up on this. Stephen L. Hill, Jr., a partner in the Kansas City Law Office, he served as a U.S. attorney in the late 1990s, and he prosecuted the Myron Piggy case, which also dealt with under-the-table payments made to college basketball players. When the investigation was over, Hill says part of his responsibility was to go to schools to share information about what had been discovered. One conversation was with Duke. Small forward Corey Maggette had signed a statement saying he'd accepted money from his AAU coach, Piggy, though Hill said prosecutors believed Duke was unaware of that payment. Duke acted quickly after that talk, self-reporting the matter to the NCAA while disclosing what it had learned from its own investigation. 5 years later, the NCAA ruled that the school would not be penalized because it had no previous knowledge that Maggette was an ineligible player. So the lawyer Hill that we're referring to out of Kansas City, who's part of that case, he highly recommends that Kansas does the same thing. You self-report what you know, and you go ahead, and basically what he's saying is walk away, I think, is what he's saying. And that since you had no previous knowledge that the Sosa received payments, you're going to be okay and you won't be penalized. And he says there's two ways to handle it, the way I just mentioned, or you could go ahead and keep letting the Sosa play because you believe he's eligible and go from there. If I'm Kansas, I think you take the option one. You self-report the NCAA on Gastonola's payment to the Sosa's guardian. You make it more likely NCAA will look favorably upon you, KU, when it comes to potential punishment, instead of just playing to Sosa and assuming that he won't later be deemed ineligible, which could put you at risk for any wins that you have this year. Wouldn't that be the common sense way to go about this?
I would say yes.
Which means the school would do their own investigation, self-report, yeah. Make the investigation public. Say, hey, okay, the NCAA, the FBI's done their investigation. We've had a court case. Now we're going to do our own investigation. We'll make it public and this and that. We're going to self-report the violations and expect or hope the NCAA will be lenient, which they typically are with big programs. And then you just move on to fight another day, and you don't keep fighting DeSosa trying to be eligible.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely the route to go, I think. But
you think KU will go that way?
The other side of that, though, is does KU have proof they didn't know about it? You know, is there enough from what's coming out with some of the stuff that's not been admissible in court,
right?
But it is admissible because the NCAA is not a court, okay? They don't have to go by those rules of what's admissible to the court. They can go by the rules of what's admissible that I know,
right,
that might have happened, and now I believe this happened, and I can, you know, bring down my – which I don't think any of that's going to happen, the punishment part of it anyway,
yeah,
no matter which way they go.
Right.
I just don't feel like they're going to punish the Blue Bloods in this whole deal. But I'm coming from the KU standpoint of, is it certain that the NCAA is going to know that we didn't know about this? and then I can give my, you know, self-report what should happen. I don't think they're going to self-report either way. I just doesn't seem like that's probably their typical style. They kind of let other people look at it for them. And so I that's what I would do, but I don't know if that's what they will do.
Well, but in a way, I mean, when you look at Kansas, they self-reported last year because they turned in all the information they knew about Billy Preston.
Yeah.
And then they let it play out, and then eventually Billy got tired of waiting, and then he went overseas, and it went a long, long time. That's the other thing about this. This could go, and that story I just told you, it was 5 years later when the NCAA decided to do anything, and they didn't.
Yeah.
Against Duke. So I don't know. I just think there's a lot of risk in playing Sylvia DeSosa. But if the NCAA says he's good to go, then to me, that's on the NCAA.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so that's what KU is going to probably do is, hey, we kind of know we probably shouldn't be playing him, but let the NCAA do it, and then it's on them. And then we like, hey, we how can we vacate wins when you said he was eligible? You did your own due diligence. And once they release the information to the public, which we don't know when all this information will be released by the FBI, but once they do, then the NCAA can use that information and come to their own conclusions and do whatever they want and do their own investigation, add to it. KU could do the same thing. But at this point in time, the NCAA doesn't have that information. So nothing's going to happen right now. So to me, what that means is Sylvia DeSosa is going to be in limbo just like Billy Preston was. And Kansas this year has a lot more depth where it's not as big a deal in regards to their team, but it stinks for DeSosa, unless all along he knew about these payments and took them, which it doesn't sound like. It sounds like the Guardian did. Now, there is an idea out there. According to ESPN, the G League, the NBA's developmental league, is creating a new venture available to elite American basketball prospects that will serve as a one-and-done alternative. The opportunity for said prospects will include select contracts worth $125,000 beginning in the summer of 2019 to elite prospects who are at least 18 years of age but not yet draft eligible. Do you think that will help any of this?
There's one thing I want to know about it that I haven't really read deep into it to know if this is going to happen or not. But it's the same thing that we're dealing with the college kids right now, and that's shoe contracts. Mm-hmm. And it's shoe deals and money from shoe companies. If they can get – if I'm an elite guy like a LeBron James, we'll just use that as an example right now coming out of high school, because everybody's like, why would you go to the G League if you can go to some school and get more prime coverage, you know, go to a blue blood school? Okay, well, here's why you go to the G League in that scenario. If I can get a $15 million shoe deal, that's more than whatever the $100-some-thousand, $125,000 I'm going to get to play in the G League. Okay, so I'm going to make more money right off the bat if I go there. So that could be one of the incentives, I think. If it's legal for them to have that shoe contract without being in the NBA yet, then I think you could see some of these guys saying, let's just bypass college and get right to it here.
That would just be for a handful of players. Because for the others, it'd be like, listen, I'm not going to get any exposure on TV. I'm playing in the G League. And by the way, you're going to have to ride in buses. You ain't going to have all the luxury. I'm going to tell you right now, when you're in a Power 5 conference, you travel in style. Yeah. You're on charters, private planes. You got all the meals you want. You get bussed around. You get taken care of. You don't have to pay hardly anything out of your own pocket.
Yeah.
So, and then you get the exposure of playing at Allen Fieldhouse or Cameron Indoor Stadium or the Pauley Pavilion or whatever it might be. All that exposure to help you on a grand stage, NCAA tournament, the Final Four, maybe the championship, and that helps your stock as you go into the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
This is really this is what they're looking at, is targeting the one and done players with a $125 salary. So I guess you'd have to weigh that. I'd agree that if you're going to skip college or you have this option, you take the $125,000, which, by the way, seems like a lot of money, but yet in the scheme of athletics, it really isn't. You're not going to have all the other conveniences I just mentioned as you would as a college athlete on scholarship. You would have to know, and I would think you could, if you're skipping college, you could sign any endorsement deal you want.
Yeah, that's one. Like a DeAndre Ayton, let's use him as an example. Like Nike can give him a $15 million contract right out of high school.
Right.
And that's a pretty good incentive to say, I'm not going to any of these places. I agree with you that it's not going to be the case for everybody.
Right.
But if you're talking about, can it fix the shoe deal problem and the shoe problem that we have with the companies, it can, I think. Because I think they can just go ahead and go target those guys right out of high school. I don't have to worry about talking to the college coaches saying, hey, this is what we're going to do. We're going to give you this. We can get you this guy in and all this. You can go right at the kid and say, hey, come to the G League. We'll give you $15 million for a shoe deal on top of what you're making to play in the G League.
Well, there's an easier solution than this. Eliminate the one and done.
It would.
That's all you have to do.
No question about that.
That would just make it simple, but it can't be simple. Just eliminate the one and done. It's a joke that these kids play under the facade that they're actually going to school. A lot of these one and dones aren't even going to class. Let's just quit with the fallacy and the whole charade. Let's just call it as it is. There are players that are amateurs getting paid at the college level to go to school for 7, 8, 9, 10 months.
Yeah.
They're not intent on getting their degree. Yeah, they might be a year ahead of the curve and they come back, 20 years later, but then they don't need it because they made so much money on shoe deals and money under the table and their NBA contracts. That would solve everything.
Yeah.
Just let that happen. Now, some people say that would hurt K-State, for instance, because then KU, Duke, and Kentucky, all these guys would start going for the next tier prospects because the one-and-doners now are not one-and-doners. They go straight to the NBA, and that could affect recruiting for those next-tier coaches and programs that do it the right way, which might be an interesting point.
Yeah, yeah.
So
as you're talking about that and saying those one-and-done kids, some of them aren't even going to class, it comes back to like another hypocritical part of the NCAA where shouldn't that count against your APR like it does these little schools that get postseason bans because their APR is not good enough because they don't have enough kids graduate? Some of these.
Listen, Dusty,
it's
come
just
on,
like,
come on.
What is the deal with that?
Come on. The NCAA is okay with cheating. I think we're going to find out. They're going to do a slap on the wrist on everybody. They're okay with cheating to get the players. You think they're going to have a big problem with some tutor doing all the homework for a one-and-done player? Come on, man. That's how they get their APR. They get great grades, buddy.
Yeah.
Great grades. They just don't do the work. Right. Now, that's not all of them, but some of them. Last night, LeBron James makes his debut. He would have been a one-and-doneer, but he didn't have to back in the day. He'd go straight to the pros. It's worked out pretty well for LeBron. But the Lakers lose last night to the Trailblazers, 128-119. LeBron, 26 points and 12 rebounds in his debut for L.A. And we told you earlier that we have some Royals baseball stuff. The Royals, Dayton Moore having his end-of-season press conference earlier this week. And, the future looks a lot brighter than we thought before the season began. Yeah, they only won 58 games. Les Norman, former Royal, host of his own sports talk show in Kansas City called Breaking the Norm, was our guest on Wednesday. And I asked him, what's the big area of concern for the Royals going into next year with all the youth that they have at the position spots? What's your biggest area of concern with this team next year? Would it be the bullpen?
Yes. Keller was a great situation where he was a great bullpen guy. You brought him in. I was skeptical, but he has done nothing but deal. People were worried about his size. The thing is, I've had a chance to do a couple out of the field appearances with him and go to a couple schools. He's a humble guy. He's a sponge. He's always asking questions. He's always learning. He's a bulldog. He doesn't give in. He's unflappable in situations where a couple guys get on base. And he's all of 23 years old. So he has the whole makeup, both brain and body and talent, to be able to get it done. So I'm not concerned about that, but filling, you don't want to take these guys that could start, and if they don't make the rotation, automatically throw them in the bullpen and think, well, they're going to be great starters, they're our answer. It doesn't always translate. It translated with Keller. It doesn't always translate. They tried this with Wade Davis, bullpen starter, and making him go back and forth, but once they finally settled in his strength, we know he's become one of the best relievers in all of baseball for a few years now. So, I think that's their main part to address. And if they don't, we could be talking about a great team that just keeps losing leads.
So the bullpen is the number one concern, but starting pitching looks to be in pretty good shape.
People think, well, Kennedy has to pitch because he made all that money and he's in the final year of his contract. But look, it's not like he's in the second year of his contract where they're going to have to eat $60 million.
Yeah.
It's the last year of his contract. And although you never want to eat money and you don't want to waste money, if Kennedy early in the season doesn't pitch like he's kind of in a decline. Yes. And of those four pitchers you mentioned, he's the one question mark for me. So if he doesn't start off decent, like you said, there's seven or eight guys that can contend for one spot. Lopez came up and dealt. I mean, he was nasty. I mean, his stuff is electric. So I could see him even filling Kennedy, the fifth spot or Kennedy's spot if he doesn't work out. And now you've got three, four guys that can fill in. So it looks really, really bright. I would really like to see Duffy. Duffy's still he's a fog.
Yes.
He's behind. You see Duffy. You see the greatness there. but there's still something there. There's a little fog of uncertainty with him. I would like to see him get his act together a little bit and pitch how we know he can pitch and be healthy. Sure, we all want Kennedy to pitch, but he's not a big concern because we have options, and that's what in the starting, and they're young options, which is what the rotation has not had.
And that's right, Chief. The Royals have not had that for the last few years, ever since they won the World Series. Even when they won the World Series, they didn't have tons of options in the starting rotation if somebody got hurt. And luckily, those 2 years, their rotation stayed relatively healthy. So starting pitching looks to be a positive, especially if Danny Duffy figures things out going in next year. And I like the take that Les has on Ian Kennedy. Listen, his final year of his contract, he doesn't have to start. People think he automatically has to. He might start out the year in the starting rotation. If he struggles, Lopez, Phil Meyer, one of the other younger guys might end up getting that rotation spot, and then you see Kennedy in the bullpen, or maybe you can trade him in his last year of his contract. So I thought that was a good point by Les. The Royals, reason to be optimistic going into next season. All right, high school. If you missed that whole interview, it's available at our podcast. Go to katycountry94.com and go to the sports ticket page. It's also on Twitter and Facebook. High school football tonight. We're going to have a busy evening. It's Thunder Ridge at Osborne on KD Country 94 and katycountry94.com. St. John's Tipton Rock Hills on Z96.3 Lake and katycountry94.com. And Beloit at Russell, live video stream at nckssports.com via the Beloit Trojan channel. Coverage begins with the Express at 5:40, brought to you by Cunningham Telephone and Cable. Coverage concludes with the local high school scoreboard show, brought to you by State Farm Insurance, tonight at 10:05. And we'll have all the playoff brackets posted by, I would think, tomorrow morning at some point at nckssports.com, so you know where your team plays and when. And they might not have the official game times, if there's some changes in some game times on long road trips by Saturday, but by Monday we should know all of that. Anything else to add? Looks like you had something to add, Dusty.
The Big 12 men's basketball preseason poll just came out.
Well, okay, I'm guessing Kansas finished what? They're going to be fifth?
Third?
Eighth?
Breaking news, Bill Self picked K-State to win the Big 12.
He can't pick his own team, yeah, right.
KU's unanimous.
Yes, shocking. K-State number two then?
Yeah.
Who's three?
West Virginia.
Yeah. Wow, who's last?
OSU.
Wow, interesting. I'm sorry, I had your button turned off. Say that again.
OSU. Oh,
I wasn't expecting you to come back.
Yeah, OSU is picked.
Let's go over again. Oh, Big 12 poll.
Yeah,
basketball
my
poll.
My bad.
Rewind
Bill,
a little further.
I said the breaking.
Yeah, we heard you. But
the breaking news is that Bill Self picked K-State to win the Big 12 because he can't pick his own team.
Yes.
KU has 9 votes, all the other 9 votes, so they're unanimous, picked first in the Big 12 preseason men's basketball poll.
Go through the order real quick.
K-State 2, West Virginia 3, TCU and Texas tied for 4th, Iowa State 6th. Tech is 7th, Oklahoma 8th, Baylor 9th, and Oklahoma State 10th.
There you have it. Breaking news when you need it. Shocking revelation. KU picked to win the Big 12 again.